This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. Lots of COVID news on this Monday. The weekly infection rate seems to have ticked slightly down in Massachusetts as surges continue elsewhere around the country still. Of the more than 500 people hospitalized in Massachusetts for COVID-19, 74% are unvaccinated. Schools and offices are reopening. New modeling from the University of Washington warns of a likely fall surge in the Commonwealth. The high infection rate nationally, August, had the highest death rate since March, means that Europe is set to impose new travel restrictions for Americans. Now, tomorrow, it's Ask the Doctors for your questions. Today, we ask ours of Dr. Ashish Jha, physician, health policy researcher, professor, and dean of the Brown University School of Public Health. Dr. Jha, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Hey, thank you so much for having me back.
So I want to start with where we are. We have more than 63% of the Commonwealth's residents fully vaccinated, just a touch over 70% partially vaccinated. The Delta variant is sweeping through the country. It's clearly firmly planted here in the Commonwealth. And I want to ask you, where are we in the path of that variant? Is there any chance of it being on the wane, at least soon?
Yeah, you know, if we were talking a couple of weeks ago, I would have said things look pretty bad. Things are going up across the country, and I would have been more pessimistic. But, you know, the experience from the UK and elsewhere shows that the Delta variant rises very, very quickly, and then it peaks and starts coming down. I am cautiously optimistic that we have seen the peak in the South. Now, it's a peak at a very, very high level, right? It's still a lot of infections every day in Florida, Texas, Louisiana, but it is starting to come down slowly. And when I look across New England, again, you don't want to call it too early, but it does look like the rate of rise is really slowed, and we may very well be at a peak here in Massachusetts. Now, we still have our toughest season, the winter, ahead of us. But I am optimistic that the Delta variant and the rapid acceleration we've seen across the country may really be slowing in a meaningful way.
So there's a piece of me that kind of wants to say to you, now don't play with my heart, Dr. Jha, because right, we all want to hear what you're saying there. So but what I think I'm hearing from you is maybe that we're past the peak or at the peak and we're going to see a waning. But probably not all the way back to the best we saw in, let's say, late May, early June, because the cooler weather is upon us. Is that right?
That's right. That's right. And the truth is there's a lot we can do to bring that those infection numbers down more quickly. There's a lot we can do to keep the infection numbers low as we get into the fall and winter. We are not at the mercy of this virus. We are now in control. We now know what to do, and we can implement smart policies and have smart behaviors, and we can do things, and we can influence where this goes.
So empower us and remind us, what should we do? You said there's a lot we can do. We know what to do. So give us the checklist.
Yeah. So remember how this virus spreads. The virus spreads largely indoors when an infected person encounters an unvaccinated person. Well, that's the major mechanism by which this virus spreads. So we've got to figure out how to make indoor spaces safer, right? And so we got to avoid super crowded indoor spaces because that can be tough. When people are indoors, people should be wearing masks, especially if you're around a lot of unvaccinated people. Vaccines are incredibly effective at preventing infection. They're very effective at preventing spread. You may have heard otherwise. You may have heard of vaccinated people can still spread. Yeah, they can, but a lot less. So vaccines help a lot. Masking helps a lot. Improving indoor air quality helps a lot. And testing helps a lot. And the reason a lot of testing helps is because if you identify people who are infected, then they stay home and they don't go out and infect a whole lot of other people. If we do all of that, we can really get through the rest of this fall and winter without a surge of cases, without people getting sick. That's really the formula. That's what we've learned over the last year.
So, you know, do we have the testing mechanisms, protocols, and muscles in place that we need right now? I mean, we are not where we were, where it was test, you know, back before we had a vaccine.
Yeah, we sort of gave up on testing. And it's really unfortunate because I believed even if Delta variant had not shown up, the testing was going to be an important part of getting our lives back to normal. But what we saw in April, May, June was sort of an abandonment of testing as a part of the strategy. And that's really been costly because when Delta showed up and started causing these large spikes, we really needed that. We still have the infrastructure. We obviously have the technical know-how. We can ramp this back up. We've got places like the Broad Institute that can do lots and lots of tests. We've got cheap antigen tests widely available. We've got to ramp up production of that and make it even cheaper and more accessible. So there's no longer a scientific barrier to us doing the kind of testing that lets us keep safe and do all the things that we love in our lives. There's a bit of a economic and a bit of a structural and organizational set of barriers that we got to meet.
So I'm thinking about schools starting in person. Worcester Public Schools went back today. The American Academy of Pediatrics, others argue for the importance of in-person learning. You talk about how, we have to be careful. We have to change our spaces inside, et cetera. How are we going to do with social distancing this fall? And do we need to renew our social distancing messaging? Or is that obviated by these other items in the checklist you've given us?
Yeah, it's probably the least important of all the things. And so, I sit on the medical advisory committee for the Newton Public Schools, right? That's where my kids go to public school. And so this stuff is personal. When we make recommendations, I'm thinking, how do I keep my kids safe in public schools in Newton? And obviously thinking about the same thing for kids across the country. And the checklist is the checklist I laid out. Get everybody who's eligible vaccinated, do weekly testing, continue to work on improving ventilation, and get everybody to wear masks indoors. I did not mention social distancing. People bring up questions like, well, does social distancing not matter at all? And I'm like, no. Some of the, we don't want to have crowded indoor assemblies. At lunch, space people out a little bit, open up the windows. Hey, see if you can do lunch outside for the next month or so while Delta numbers are still high. There are things we can do on the distancing side, but that is not the most important thing. And we've seen that over and over again. If you do the other four, you get a big break on distancing.
And I do want to note, according to the Globe, Governor Baker said today that roughly 2/3 of kids age 12 and up are inoculated in the Commonwealth now. One more thing on children. We understand that more children are getting the Delta variant than got the Alpha. We also know that the Alpha strain had a very low mortality rate for kids. What about severe illness and death for kids with the Delta variant?
Yeah, this is the big question that we've all been thinking about. So a lot of kids have gotten sick. Because a lot of kids have gotten infected. And so the outbreaks, especially in the South, have been so massive that kids get infected when adults around them are not vaccinated and spread it to them. And so as kids have gotten infected, a bunch of them have ended up hospitalized in the ICU, and unfortunately some children have died. But the question is, if you're an average child who's gotten infected today with Delta versus Alpha 6 months ago, is your risk higher of a complication? And, we don't have definitive evidence. It's still, the jury's out. However, as I read the literature leans towards, yes, more severe disease with Delta. The literature is not overwhelming. I don't want to overcall this here. But most of the data I'm seeing suggests that Delta may be more dangerous than Alpha was for adults and for kids.
All right. So with that in mind, once again, for my heart and everyone else's, I almost hate to ask this next question, but we are seeing reporting out of South Africa of yet another variant, the so-called C.1.2, since been found in 7 countries associated with increased transmissibility, increased ability to evade antibodies. So what do we know and what are we watching for?
Yeah, what we're watching for is both laboratory and clinical data to see how this variant functions. What I will say to everybody is expect more variants, because this is a global pandemic, and as long as the virus continues to rage across the globe, there will be more variants. Most of them will not matter. I don't know if C.1.2 will end up mattering or not. We heard about the Delta Plus that came out of India that got everybody concerned. It turned out probably to be a Delta Minus, not that important. We're going to hear a lot of early reports, and I generally tend to take them all with a big grain of salt. Because I want to see the clinical data. I want to see what's happening in the labs, in the test tubes, as we're testing these viruses. And, Delta is bad enough. And I'm at this moment not worried about some new variant. We've got to deal with the variant we have in front of us. And we've got to help the world get vaccinated. And then we just have to let the data drive us in terms of what to think about the Lambda or the C.1.2 or whatever next variant this pandemic throws at us.
All right, let's talk about a tweet, and it's actually not one of yours. August 21st, the FDA tweets, quote, "You are not a horse. You are not a cow. Seriously, y'all, stop it," end quote, in response to a growing trend among some to use a livestock dewormer to try to treat COVID-19. We do not want to spread false information, Dr. Joss, so please explain to us what is going on here.
Yeah. You know, the misinformationists, and they all have different agenda items for why they're spreading misinformation and disinformation. Often it's really to make a buck. But in the last 4 or 5 months, they have glommed on to ivermectin, this drug that has been tested so far in humans for COVID and doesn't work. There are other clinical trials that are ongoing, and obviously if they show that it works, great. But it has become this thing in certain circles, often in politically conservative kind of information ecosystems, that somehow there is this life-saving drug that the medical establishment is keeping from you. And so the recommendation to these people who are mostly, snake oil salesmen are making is don't get vaccinated and take ivermectin instead. Well, unfortunately, a lot of people are getting sick from COVID and they go out and buy this livestock medicine and they get sicker, or they're taking it prophylactically and ending up in the hospital with liver damage and all sorts of other problems. So, you know, it really does pay to like pay attention to your doctor, do the right things, follow the science. And most kind of, treatments that are too good to be true, that sound too good to be true, they usually are.
Maybe get vaccinated instead.
Absolutely.
All right. That is Dr. Ashish Jha, physician, health policy researcher, professor of the dean of the Brown University School of Public Health. Dr. Jha, hey, thanks. Have a great week.
Thank you so much for having me back. It was a pleasure.